An affordable housing summit this week reminds us that unless Florida, especially South Florida, finds solutions to the crisis, more of us may be left out in the streets. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup. I'm your host, Tim Padgett. In the next hour, we're going to talk exclusively about the housing crisis in South Florida and how to create more affordable housing as the cost of renting or owning a home, from Palm Beach to Key West, becomes more and more out of reach. We'll discuss the remedies that are gaining consensus across the region and across the state, from increased housing density to ramped up housing vouchers. And we'll look at how South Florida is or isn't putting those answers to work. All that coming up right after the news. I'm Tim Padgett. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Bienvenidos, bienveni, benvindo. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Florida last year was one of five states that saw the highest percentage increase in homelessness. And most experts agree that while factors like unemployment and mental health are certainly at play, one of the big drivers is the skyrocketing cost of renting or owning a home in Florida, especially South Florida. As we've mentioned before on this show, the median cost of a single-family house in Miami-Dade County is 10 times the median salary, which is why something else also happened last year. Affordable housing finally became a hot-button issue in Florida, and this year we're seeing a raft of solutions emerging to help bridge the chasm between the massive demand for housing in Florida and its scarce availability and affordability. This week, another major Florida housing summit took place, this time in St. Petersburg. So we decided to dedicate all of this week's South Florida Roundup to what is arguably South Florida's most critical crisis. What are your ideas for fixing the affordable housing emergency here? Have you been affected by it? Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Joining me now is former Florida State Senator Jeff Brandis. He's the founder of the nonprofit Florida Policy Project, which was the driving force behind this week's housing summit. Senator Brandis, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
I want to start with the housing summit the Florida Policy Project hosted, along with other entities in St. Petersburg on Wednesday. Tell us who was there and what you think the most important proposals were that came out of it, Senator.
Absolutely. So the Florida Policy Project is based on identifying best practices from around the country and bringing those best practice policies to Florida. That's our number one goal. And housing is a major component of that issue. And the Housing Summit was really the culmination of a lot of work that we've done over the last year, identifying best practices in both traditional zoning and accessory dwelling units, but also looking at housing vouchers. And so the summit really brought up a lot of those issues, bringing in national experts to Florida to talk about solutions. Florida is really careening towards where California was a few years ago, with housing prices being out of control. And in many ways, they're still out of control.
Sure, in places like San Francisco, sure.
Absolutely, LA, San Francisco. And so we have to get our arms around this issue really quickly. And unfortunately, it takes years for a lot of these solutions to play out.
Right.
But some of the solutions that really came out of this program were things like the simplest ones were just authorizing accessory dwelling units. These are right. Mother-in-law suites, granny flats, garage apartments, those right. types of products, and allowing those to be on the market.
Right.
Things like smaller lot sizes would be mm-hmm. incredibly helpful.
Right. Let's focus for a second on that, what is perhaps the most discussed affordable housing solution for Florida, and that's increasing what you're talking about, housing density, or often what's called upzoning. That movement, as it were, seems especially relevant to South Florida because the geography down here, I mean, we're hemmed in by the Atlantic on one side and the Everglades on the other, that limits our available land space. So we're starting to see the trend build here in Miami-Dade County, certainly. But tell us more about what upzoning entails and what more has to be done on the local and state level to get it more widely adopted.
Absolutely. If there's one bottom line issue that we've got to resolve, it's the fact that if you don't fix zoning, you don't fix housing. And upzoning is a major component to that. Upzoning is simply allowing more density on what is traditional single family lots, allowing more mixed use on commercial properties. Those types of things are considered upzoning. Where we have today, a single family lot that can only house one unit, allowing that property to then maybe have a duplex or a quad on it, or maybe a small garden style apartment.
Right.
The simple truth is, housing is really a pyramid. And if you don't have enough housing at the top, they push out into the middle, and the people in the middle push into the bottom, and the people at the bottom get pushed out. And so upzoning is a major solution for that.
Right. We've got to start thinking beyond just the single family ranch house and God's little half acre then. That's archaic now as far as we should be concerned.
Absolutely, because what it forces is people to drive till they qualify. You have to get in your car in Miami. If you want to qualify for a traditional middle class home that's $400,000 to $500,000, how far out do you have to drive in order to find that house? And that's called the drive till you kind of qualify issue. And so I think there's an opportunity for us to reimagine zoning, to allow for more product, to more allow for more density in traditional areas, traditional single family home areas. And the beautiful thing is, we can make those homes look just like a single family home as we redevelop them.
Right.
But that upzoning is a major one of those ideas.
Now, the other prominent affordable housing solution you and the Florida Policy Project promote is housing vouchers, or the subsidy known as Section 8 in federal housing policy parlance, right?
Does that Section 8's part of it? Yes.
Yeah. So remind our listeners how that voucher process works and why it's so important to this issue.
Well, the voucher process works like this. People have a minimum amount of income, but that minimum amount of income doesn't allow them to qualify for market rate housing in their communities, or even affordable housing in some cases in their communities. And so they apply to a government organization to get a housing voucher that really meets that delta between where their income is and where their minimum rents are. And they can utilize that to go into market rate or affordable housing products. The beauty of that is it allows them to transition to, if they want to move closer to their schools, they want to move closer to downtown where they work, and it allows them to have some flexibility being forced in versus being forced into kind of a government housing
Right.
apartment that may be far away from their work and far away from their kids' school.
But I know one of your big complaints is that Florida has not been taking advantage enough of that housing voucher solution. You've been pointing out something rather astonishing lately, and that's the fact that in Miami-Dade County, for example, people have been waiting as long as 14 years to receive these housing vouchers when nationally the average wait time is only 21 months. Why does the voucher system at least look so dysfunctional in Florida and South Florida? Is this just a problem of landlords and developers being reluctant to take on voucher tenants, or is it a more complicated problem than that?
I think it's a slightly more complicated, but I think to the tenant and landlord relationship is one that we've got to resolve. But the other issue really is nobody's really scrubbing the waiting lists. And people are moving between counties in that 14-year period, but they're staying on the Miami-Dade County waiting list. And so we've got to constantly scrub these waiting lists. But absolutely, we need to be working with developers to see what incentives they need in order to take vouchers, because ultimately we have to have a supply of housing to put people in. But frankly, we need more resources towards housing vouchers. And that's one of the major issues that our study points out.
You've said perhaps as much as $25 billion to get us up to where we need to
Well,
be.
I mean, look, that would be to include, all of the eligible individuals in the state of Florida in the housing voucher program. Now, clearly that number is not
Sure.
feasible.
Okay.
So what is feasible, right? Can we get what do it take to get Miami down from the 14-year average to the 22-month average, which is what it is around the rest of the country? And I
Right.
think those are the types of strategies that the Florida Policy Project is putting forward.
Okay. We have Dawn from Hollywood on the line. She has some input on this issue. Dawn, welcome to the South Florida Roundup.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate the discussion very much. Okay, so I hope it's pertinent to your discussion. Something that really kind of like alarmed me this week was the talk about selling off schools, right, and Broward schools and closing schools in Broward County. And I see a lot of development projects coming up around the church that I go to. There are three projects all around our church that will go up and become like apartment buildings for affordable housing. And more of that is going on in Hallandale. And I just wonder. wonder to myself, does it make sense to close schools? I see a lot of provisions being made to bring, like, more people into South Florida and the roads being expanded to accommodate more people. But right. then the schools are also being closed, okay. well, and these things don't seem to jive to me.
Well, thanks for your call, Don. I think, Senator Brandis, maybe we should remind callers like Don, though, that we still have 1,000 people a day moving into Florida.
Absolutely. We have about 250,000 people net every year moving to Florida. That's 1,000 people moving in. Obviously, some people are moving out, but net, it's about 250,000 people per year moving to the state. And we're not building anywhere near the type of housing capacity necessary. And so it's basic supply and demand. As you know, demand increases and supply remains steady, then ultimately prices go up and reflect that. And so that's what we're seeing across the state of Florida right now.
Senator, what do you feel is holding Florida back from pursuing affordable housing solutions like upzoning and vouchers? What needs to change in Tallahassee, for example, to give these kinds of proposals more wings?
Well, I will tell you, having spent 12 years in Tallahassee, I couldn't tell you what the housing strategy is for the state of Florida from the Tallahassee's perspective. It's largely been let the cities and counties kind of organize themselves and run their own housing plans. But what we've seen is this has not worked. And ultimately, Tallahassee needs to get involved and offer some kind of carrot and sticks to incentivize counties to move towards a more housing, more policies that are focused more on housing affordability. Mm-hmm. And so I think ultimately we need to talk about smaller lot sizes. We need to talk about upzoning. We need to talk about getting rid of parking requirements, accessory dwelling units, streamlining permits. There are a variety of different things that we can do that we know that it will help solve this problem. But right. right now, there's no incentive from Tallahassee or other places to engage in some of this conversation.
But we did see some engagement recently, but you've also been critical or at least wary of the state legislators' new Live Local Act, which appropriates more than $700 million for affordable housing, which was widely applauded when it was passed recently, but which you feel perhaps doesn't do enough to address these so-called best practices we've just been talking about. Is that correct?
Absolutely, because Live Local predominantly focuses only on apartment developers. And we need a lot more than just more apartments in Florida. We need single family homes. I mean, where is the starter home in Miami? And how much does a starter home cost in Miami?
Right.
I mean,
well, as we pointed out, it can be 10 times more than the average salary. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm speaking with former Florida State Senator Jeff Brandis about long overdue solutions to fix the state's affordable housing emergency. Call us with your ideas at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-3975-76. Senator, I want to take a step back here and talk about you for a second. I think a lot of people assume the leading voices on affordable housing reform in Florida would be Democrats, but you're a Republican from St. Petersburg. And so I wanted to ask you how you became such a passionate advocate for increased affordable housing. What drives you on this issue, perhaps more than other concerns in the state?
Well, my big takeaway after 12 years in Tallahassee was everything in Tallahassee is tactical. There really is no strategy. Floridians are paying four times more than the national average for property insurance. We have clearly no strategy on affordable housing. Our criminal justice system and prison system is a disaster right now. And we've got to fix a lot of these issues. I've always been gravitated towards the hard problems of Florida when I was in the legislature and now running my nonprofit.
Right. We have also Greg on the line from Delray Beach, and he brings up the issue of other factors like high taxes. Greg, welcome to the South Florida Roundup.
Yes, hi, thanks. Yeah, the taxes here in Delray have been consistently going up. We just have one small duplex that we rent out, and we get smacked every year, a thousand in the last few years of increase. And then in addition, I look around in where we live, and all those mother-in-law suites you were talking about and everything else, tons of them. So Delray Beach is massively building everywhere. But then you have the short-term stuff, all these Airbnbs. Just in our neighborhood, there's at least three rentals that I see people come and go short-term. And some of them are the Airbnb. Some of them are people doing right. off the records, living there.
Right.
But no one can establish.
Yeah, so too much housing stock being directed in areas that really don't help the affordable housing crisis. Thanks for your call,
exactly.
Greg. Yep. And Senator, Greg sort of steers me in the direction that I wanted to go now, which is to discuss other key factors besides just these issues we've been talking about, that, you know, affordable housing, for example, has a lot to do with the low wages in Florida and our tourism-based economy that only tends to deepen the crisis. Local governments like Miami Beach, for example, have in recent years raised the minimum wage to help low-wage hospitality workers afford housing, for example. But Governor DeSantis and the Republican-controlled legislature have preempted or nullified ordinances like that. If pay doesn't improve in the state, does anything we do to improve affordable housing stock really matter?
Absolutely, it matters, because even if you're making $15 or $20 an hour, how are you going to afford a $500,000 starter home? I mean, you're going to be renting forever in that case. We ultimately have to bring more supply online. And in areas like Miami-Dade, Pinellas County, where it's a peninsula on Florida's peninsula, we're surrounded on water by three sides. In Miami-Dade, you're bordered by the Everglades and you're bordered by the ocean. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, we have to think about how we're going to do more with the land that we have. And that's going to have to include upzoning. That's going to have to get rid of certain parking requirements. That's doing things like adding accessory dwelling units in. That is having a strong and robust voucher program. That's shrinking down our lot sizes to allow that lot today, even if it's a vacant lot, is $200,000 or $300,000 today. We can cut that in half. Then we have two lots that are 150, which make it a lot more affordable. And those are the types of strategies that we have to implement, and way beyond just focusing on apartments.
Right. And Senator, we also have to address the other elephant in the affordable housing room here, which is insurance, rather the skyrocketing cost of insuring housing in Florida today, whether it's single family homes or high rise condos, whether you own or rent. Exorbitant homeowners and windstorm coverage is also making housing in this state more and more inaccessible. Again, if that crisis isn't fixed, does anything else matter?
Well, I think that crisis is actually beginning to get fixed. Okay. The legislature passed laws back in 2022 that went into effect in April of 2023. And what we're seeing is we're starting to see the green shoots of new companies forming in Florida, which is an incredibly positive sign. We're seeing reinsurers getting more aggressive in Florida and wanting to deploy more capital here. So that's ultimately what we need. Look, we've lost about 12 companies in Florida in the last 36 months. Citizens now has 1.3 million policies inside of Citizens. It's by far the largest homeowners insurance company. And that is, we need to make those adjustments to encourage more capital to be deployed here in Florida. Mm-hmm. That's the only way. Competition is the only way we're going to get pricing down.
Senator, in the minute we have left, I know the Florida Policy Project recently issued a study that goes into other best practices than just the two you and I have been discussing here, which is, you know, higher housing density and housing vouchers. It recommended a few others. In the last 30 seconds we have here, what are the other key best practice findings of that study for affordable housing in Florida?
For affordable housing, we really focused on accessory dwelling units, smaller lot sizes, upzoning as the major things that we need to be focusing on. Okay. I would add those that we need to deal with parking requirements as well. Okay. And frankly, that we need to fix our zoning processes in Florida.
Okay. Well, Jeff Brandis is a former Florida state senator and founder of the nonprofit Florida Policy Project. Senator Brandis, many thanks.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
Still to come, we talk with experts from Palm Beach County to the Keys about South Florida's housing solutions. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. We're dedicating this week's show to Florida's, and especially South Florida's, severe affordable housing crisis, and more important, the solutions finally emerging to fix it. We just spoke with former Florida State Senator Jeff Brandis of the Florida Policy Project, which hosted a major housing summit in St. Petersburg this week. And we'd like to turn now to housing experts from across the South Florida region, from Palm Beach, Broward, Miami-Dade, and Monroe counties, to hear their particular perspectives on how our region's acute housing emergency is being solved. Joining me now is Christina Hewitt. She's the housing manager for the Community Land Trust of Palm Beach County and the Treasure Coast. Sandra Einhorn, executive director of the Nonprofit Coordinating Council of Broward. Annie Lord, executive director of the nonprofit Miami Homes for All. and Hannah Edwards, Assistant Director for the nonprofit Habitat for Humanity in Key West and the Lower Florida Keys. Welcome to all of you, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. We
also want to hear from you, our listeners, about South Florida's affordable housing crisis and its solutions. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. I'm very curious to hear each of your takes on some of the best practices solutions I just discussed with Senator Brandis, starting with this idea that when it comes to housing, Florida has got to start building smaller, denser, higher, in a word, upzoning. Let's go from north to south here. And so let me start with you, Christina Hewitt. How is the upzoning trend, if it is a trend, playing out in Palm Beach County? And does it mesh with the particular affordable housing needs up there?
Well, one of the things we've been working with specifically with our agency is we're building already on those smaller lots, those 25-foot lots for home ownership opportunities, which is where we're seeing a lot of it going, because we can then put on a cottage home that's around 1,200 square foot and do it at an affordable price for that starter home, and then make it permanently affordable as well, since we are a land trust and it costs so much more to create one unit, and one and done isn't working anymore for us because the gap's too big.
Right. And tell us the size of the lot that you just mentioned. What would that look like in comparison to the usual, as I said before, half acre lot that we're so used to building on in Florida?
It's definitely, like I said, it'd be a home that's roughly 1,200 square feet, but still 3-bedroom, 2-bath right. with a parking pad. They're a little closer. But not an inch of space being wasted. But with our last project, we're working with the three home buyers on now with land donated by the Lake Worth Beach CRA, ARPA funding from Palm Beach County. We're actually able to sell a brand new home to three first-time home buyers for $205,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And please remind our listeners what CRA stands for.
Community Redevelopment Agency.
Right. And there are a lot of those around South Florida, I know, and they play a very key role, no?
Yes, they do. And this is a way local government or local quasi-government entities can partner with nonprofits to leverage resources, because land, like the senator said, is very limited, right. And we need to maximize what we have in addition to the cost of building. Mm-hmm. And that's where other partners like Palm Beach County, that's why they've taken the initiative and did a bond even.
Right.
Recently.
And I'm going to talk to you about those bond issues a little later. Sandra Einhorn, what is the biggest affordable housing issue in Broward County? And is upzoning or higher housing density seen there as a best practice solution in the governmental and developer circles your organization tries to bridge?
So absolutely. I mean, I certainly want to echo all of the remarks from Senator Brandis. You know, I think that right now our biggest challenge is the disconnect between recognizing that upzoning, especially along our transportation corridors, is probably one of the best tools in our toolbox, given Live Local passing at the state level, but convincing what is largely suburbia in Broward County to get comfortable with additional density, I think is the harder part of that, both in convincing elected officials to understand the benefits of additional density along transportation corridors in commercial areas, you know, better matching density to where jobs are. Mm-hmm. I think that's where there's a lot of opportunity. But again, when you look at Broward County, so much of Broward is the suburbs. And so when you're used to low density, it's a lot harder to try and convince people that having that additional density is going to be of benefit.
Do you get the feeling, though, the developers are that their mindset, let's say, is getting more on board with the idea of higher density development for housing?
Listen, developers are going to build whatever can pencil out. And, you know, I've often said that, you know, there's always sort of this rub with developers. Developers are our solution providers, as you know, for now and in the foreseeable future. They are our partners. They are ready, willing, and able to build whatever it is, whatever deal can pencil out.
Yeah.
And so that includes subsidies. You know, at the end of the day, affordable housing is a real estate deal with a subsidy.
Yeah.
And so you either subsidize it on the front end to bring down the cost for the developer, or to Senator Brandis's point, you're subsidizing it on the back end.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the developers that we have in Broward and across South Florida are incredibly capable of building really phenomenal projects and developments that look just like market rate.
Yeah. Now, Annie Lord, I know higher housing density is being taken more seriously in Miami-Dade County, but is it the answer for the particular affordable housing needs in Florida's most populous county?
Great question, Tim, and thanks for having me on. I think that I would also double down on everything that Senator Brandis said and that I've heard from the other folks on here today. We do need to have higher density, particularly along mass transit lines. But I would say that while certain recent policies locally and at the state level have given more possibility for upzoning in Miami-Dade, it's not really done much to address the affordability issue. In Miami-Dade, we lack 90,000 rental units affordable to households earning just $75,000 a year.
Wow.
So we have a, you know, we have a very expensive housing market and very low wages. So unless we actually do something to create supply that is pretty deeply affordable, we're not really going to get to the heart of the matter. And that's why actually, and you know, I know you're going to ask about affordable housing government obligation bonds, but that's one of the, you know, best tools that we've got in our playbook, mixing metaphors. We've got it. We have to actually invest in housing that will be affordable to our workforce.
And I want to get you to that wages issue a little later in the show. And Hannah Edwards, I get the feeling that the affordable housing issues in the Keys and Monroe County are perhaps different than the rest of South Florida. If so, how does the higher density solution we've been talking about really come into play there?
Yeah, it is different because down here we are not just limited in land, but we're limited in our development. We have what's called ROGOs, which stands for Rate of Growth Ordinance. And that's basically a building allocation because we have to think always about our evacuation times if there's a hurricane. We all have to evacuate on one road, the whole Keys.
Right.
So, you know, there are evacuation studies that determine how long it will take all the residents to evacuate, and we can't add any more building than that road can handle for in an evacuation.
Right.
So
Good
you
point.
Can have an empty property, but without the ROGO to build a home on it, it's just an empty property.
Yeah.
So, you know, to the density question, it's people down here are sort of excited about trying to reconfigure our shopping centers to multi-use developments with housing on top of shopping. Mm-hmm. But without the ROGOs, that can't be done.
Right.
So it all depends on the ROGOs.
Right. We have Paul on the line from Delray Beach. He feels that smaller homes would help alleviate the problem, as we've been discussing. Paul, welcome to the South Florida Roundup.
Hi. I grew up in Massachusetts, and my parents bought a small home in the 50s. It was a 1,200 square foot house. We had a breezeway and one car garage. Then a very small lot, probably I'd say 10 feet around the property.
Right.
And I think that would work. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need we had a basement, so it doubled our space.
Right.
But just an idea. And
what you're essentially saying is we Southeasterners have to be thinking a little bit more like Northeasterners then when it comes to this issue. Paul, thanks for your call. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with housing experts from Palm Beach County to the Keys about our region's affordable housing emergency and its solutions. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. I also want to address with each of you quickly the housing voucher or Section 8 issue that Senator Brandis also emphasized, and this feeling that it's relatively dysfunctional here in Florida right now. Christina Hewitt, are the Section 8 and other voucher problems we discussed, are they palpable in Palm Beach County? And if so, what's being done to address them?
So far, what I've seen, there are many landlords that will not rent to voucher holders. My agency actually has a small rental development that we manage, and we constantly do get calls from people saying that. at this point, there hasn't been a lot of action. I know some of the other counties have actually, like Broward specifically, got aggressive and said you couldn't make that part of fair housing, which it's a challenge out there. But and I know as a landlord, having worked with housing authorities, there definitely are some caveats. So it's if the more the process gets streamlined on both sides, it probably could help. But definitely it's a tool for helping to bridge for some. And I can tell you the families that have them, they treat those things like gold.
Yeah. And but is Palm Beach County seeing the kind of wait times that Senator Brandis described in Miami-Dade County? I mean, 14 years?
That's common nationally, sadly.
Wow. Okay. So, well, Sandra Einhorn, what about Broward County? Christina just mentioned how Broward's getting more aggressive here. What about Broward County when it comes to housing vouchers?
So again, I think it kind of goes back to perception and stigma. You know, there's such a stigma around Section 8 vouchers and the antiquated idea of who needs it and who lives in it. And so whenever I talk about housing affordability and housing affordability issues, I really like to remind people that either you are struggling with housing affordability or the people that you rely on every single day are struggling with housing affordability. So there is nobody that is immune to this issue. And so you, when you want to start to stigmatize who may or may not live in Section 8 housing, I think sometimes you'd be surprised to find that the people that you rely on every day, from your preschool teacher to the person that serves your food to, you know, your nail lady, your pool guy, your lawn guy, you know, all the people that if you are fortunate enough to not suffer from housing affordability issues, the people that you rely on every day do. And so how do we do a better job of addressing that stigma and helping landlords understand that taking these vouchers is of benefit to them because that's guaranteed rent every single month.
Right.
And so I find that a lot of times, which is again why I frame the issue as a housing affordability issue as opposed to affordable housing. Affordable housing has this stigma to it. But when you think about it conceptually as a housing affordability issue, it then perhaps provides an opportunity to talk about things that were previously stigmatized in a way that is much more neutralized.
Right. Now, Annie Lord, as Senator Brandis claimed, the waiting time in Miami-Dade County, as I mentioned, for housing vouchers seems inordinately long. Is it a real issue holding back affordable housing accessibility in Miami-Dade?
I think it's actually the reverse, Tim. We had 132,000 applicants recently for 5,000 vouchers that opened up. You know, the issue here is the lack of supply.
Yeah.
So when you have a voucher in Miami-Dade, you're really going to struggle to find a place to that will take it. And Sandra's quite right. I think there is a stigma, but I think ultimately what we're talking about is a lack of supply. Now, interestingly, we've recently at Miami Homes for All, in partnership with Miami-Dade County Homeless Trust and with the Children's Trust, launched a landlord database that invites landlords and coaches them to accept folks who have vouchers, to accept folks who are exiting homelessness. And the take-up we've had is actually really astounding. In a very short amount of time, 300 properties signed up for this program and to receive support to access public subsidies for their units. So I think that there are ways to increase the supply for folks with vouchers, but fundamentally, we just have to build more.
And Hannah Edwards, I know in the most recent state legislative session, there was a bill, SB 1456, I believe, to steer more of that subsidy money to the Keys. Is that perceived down there as a potential help?
Well, actually, rather than steering more money here, it's basically going to allow us more flexibility to use the funding that we're already
That's
getting.
Already there. Okay, right.
Yeah, our hands have been tied on certain funding because of our makeup down here. For example, with the state's Housing Initiative Partnership Program, the SHIP program, there are set-asides which we just could not meet. We were supposed to use a certain amount of that money for homeownership and a certain amount of that money for homeownership for very low income. Mm-hmm. And there's just no way we can do very low income homeownership down here. It's just really impossible. The homeowners wouldn't be able to pay insurance, you know?
Yeah.
So it's freeing up some of those restrictions on the money that we have.
Right.
And allowing us, it's removing barriers for us.
We have Celeste on the line from Miami, and she seems to be on board with a lot of what we've been talking about as well. Celeste, welcome to the South Florida Roundup.
Thank you. Yeah, my question is this, and I think it's been brought up a couple of times, that it's always this gut-wrenching process of trying to upzone and bring multifamily housing into residential single-family home areas, yet I drive by miles and miles and miles of single-story retail buildings, and I ask myself, why don't we build on top of this retail, you know, mid-rise apartment buildings the way we see them build whenever we visit, you know, Madrid and Paris, right, and every place else.
So you're talking about multi-use, not just for residential, but also for commercial. That's another
you've
good.
You've got a restaurant on the bottom floor. What better, right, you know, use above you,
right,
that airspace, than a bunch of people living above you? So is that part of the solution? Could that be part of the solution? Or is, you know, rezoning that to, I guess it's called multi-use zoning?
Yes,
is that on the table?
Cause oh, no, I think it definitely is, as we've been discussing. Thanks very much, Celeste. We need to take a short break here, and when we come back, I want to delve deeper with our guests into what's being done around South Florida to fix our affordable housing crisis. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN.
We're funded by members and Jackie Abraham Jewelers. Selling a piece of jewelry like a family heirloom can be emotional. The team at Jackie Abraham Jewelers are dedicated to ensuring discretion and sensitivity. More at JackieAbraham.com, where confidence is precious.
Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. We're dedicating this week's show to Florida's, and especially South Florida's, severe affordable housing crisis, and more important, the solutions finally emerging to fix it. Let's return now to our conversation with some of South Florida's best housing experts. With me is Christina Hewitt, housing manager for the Community Land Trust of Palm Beach County and the Treasure Coast, Sandra Einhorn, executive director of the nonprofit Coordinating Council of Broward, Annie Lord, executive director of the nonprofit Miami Homes for All, and Hannah Edwards, assistant director for the nonprofit Habitat for Humanity in Key West and the Lower Florida Keys. And of course, we'd like to hear from you, our listeners, about how to fix South Florida's affordable housing emergency. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Christina Hewitt, I know one of the big issues up in Palm Beach County recently has been bond issues to increase affordable housing stock. How is that new revenue being used for the most part? What do you see in particular is working up there?
Well, actually, this Tuesday, the first awards under the bond are going to be considered by the Board of County Commissioners. It is definitely going to be a boom to rental housing. It's needed. Housing is a spectrum, and we need it at all levels along the way, rental to ownership. The first ownership piece is going out as well. We'll be seeing how that all works. And it's just filling a gap that's needed in the way of financing, because we do need flexible financing. It is expensive to build in South Florida. My last project, the total development cost was $251 per square foot.
Wow.
And that was for a small home, and that makes it, that's where the gaps come in. And that's where, everybody really would take this village to make it happen.
But is more of this bond revenue being steered toward rental or ownership style
right
properties?
Right now, it looks like there's only, from what I saw, only one ownership project right now being considered, and multiple rental ones. The rental program is really meshed very well. And the bond is evolving on the ownership side.
Because we often hear that in Palm Beach County, renting can be more expensive than owning. Is that really the case?
Median sales price in March for a single family detached property was $640,000. Okay. So finding anything is a challenge right now.
Right.
And median income just came out for a household of four in Palm Beach County. It's $104,000. So even if you use three times that, you couldn't buy half the house.
still quite a gap. Yeah. Sandra
exactly.
Einhorn, Broward County has been perhaps more notable than other places in South Florida for having a so-called master plan for increased affordable housing. And I know a lot of it involves getting municipalities on board to build more affordable housing inside their boundaries after, let's say, years and years of resisting it. Can you tell us how the master plan is working out in Broward now?
Sure. So the theme of the master plan, and it was Broward County's master plan, was leading the charge, sharing the burden. And that tagline was really important to us because I think that it's important to recognize that obviously government alone is not going to solve this issue, but it's not just county government. You know, we need tools from the federal level. We need tools from the state level. We need the county invested, but obviously everything, you know, everything is local. We really need the cities involved as well. And so whether it's zoning issues or it's funding, I think it's imperative to be able to really put together a plan that encompasses what everyone can do, because we really need everyone to do things differently in order to move the needle. And I think what often gets lost in the conversation that we made sure to stress in the master plan was the economic impact of addressing housing affordability. Right. You know, sometimes you heard the numbers, how many tens of thousands of people in Broward and Monroe and Miami-Dade and Palm Beach are suffering and can't afford where they live. Yeah. And while sometimes it seems so overwhelming, even if you don't solve it, every step that you take closer towards it, one is every household that then becomes stable. But again, when you think about the economic impact and the investment that goes into housing, the construction impact, the ongoing annual spending, the ongoing jobs, the construction jobs, the number of residents served, and recognizing that a lot of these government programs are not loan programs. There's funding that comes back, spurring opportunity.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that the economic impact of addressing housing is something that gets lost in the conversation because we're so focused on gaining consensus around the solution that I think when we frame the solution better, we're able to really move the needle and have full conversation.
And framing it that way has perhaps helped decrease a lot of that NIMBYism, let's say, that was sort of keeping a lot of municipalities in Broward from getting on board the affordable housing boat.
I think we still see it, but you know, we really wanted to get our numbers and make sure that our data was at that municipal level. So it's not you're looking countywide and you're saying, oh, well, that's not my city, but every single city is now able to see what the supply and demand is for their residents. And when you're able to personalize it a little bit more, it's harder to make those NIMBY arguments because now you're not just talking about some random person, but that resident, there's a face now to who needs that housing.
Right. Now, Annie Lord, late last year, WLRN aired a report looking at how Miami-Dade County has actually doubled its investment in affordable housing constructions since 2021 to the tune of about $260 million. And I know Miami-Dade Mayor Levine Cava has made a big push for it. Are we starting to see the kinds of results organizations like yours advocate for?
I think we're still quite a ways off. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from the progress. And in particular, I think opening the conversation to have a local government obligation bond that would be of significance for affordable housing as well as other issues, I think that's a really good conversation to have. I mean, we just did a study of the existing affordable housing development pipeline. We've identified 14,000 units that are shovel ready if we can raise $1.5 billion in subsidy. And that would have all sorts of economic secondary impacts as well. $1.5 billion may sound like a lot, but when you're talking about several billion dollars in a government obligation bond, you know, that's actually a pretty achievable number. And we can take a huge bite out of the apple in terms of filling our affordable housing gap. So if we have a gap of 90,000 rental units today, and we can construct 14,000 or at least invest quickly and start construction on 14,000, that's real progress. So I like the trend of the investment going up, but I think we're talking about a different order of magnitude here that's needed.
Hannah Edwards, we discussed earlier the legislation in Tallahassee to free up millions more dollars down in the Keys for affordable housing, but there have been questions about whether or not Monroe County's agencies are really equipped to follow through with that kind of mission. How important then are housing nonprofits like Habitat for Humanity, your organization, when it comes to increasing affordable housing stock in the Keys?
Particularly in the city of Key West, the government is not even allowed to buy land. There's a city ordinance that prevents them from purchasing properties. So their hands are kind of tied. So we really all have to work together on this. And there has been significant development on the rental end, but what we're really missing is that affordable homeownership options. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I'm afraid of is that in the future, in the next 20 years, you would just have people living in the rentals, but they can only make up to a certain income. And there's such a gap between that top rental income and being able to purchase a home that we're going to be missing a huge gap in workers. You know, we're going to be missing.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah.
Professional people.
Yeah. And we're going to get to that a little later, too. We have Maria Luisa on the line in Miami. Maria Luisa, welcome to the South Florida Roundup. What are your thoughts on these issues?
Well, I'm an architect, so I've given this issue a lot of thought, and I'm very concerned with the Live Local Act. We could end up with a whole bunch of tall buildings close to single family residences with no control really by the local government. And again, these are structures that are being built for the upper middle class. The lower middle class is not going to be able to afford the rentals that they're going to be allowed to rent.
Yeah.
So I had a different take on this. What if we took the corner lots in single family developments that are on major thoroughfares? And if we did something that Coral Gables has done very, very well, which is they have a mix of duplexes, quadruplexes, and small apartment buildings integrated with their single-family houses.
Mm-hmm.
So could we do that in the major major streets? Because those streets are going to have sewer and water already.
Yeah. No, these are all great thoughts, Maria Luisa. Thanks very much. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with housing experts from Palm Beach County to the Keys about our region's affordable housing emergency and its solutions. Christina Hewitt, very quickly, I know another big affordable housing concern in Palm Beach County is housing discrimination. The fact that practices like redlining have persisted there, according to recent studies anyway. Is this still a problem in Palm Beach? And if so, how big an effect does it have on the county's ability to fix the affordable housing crisis there?
Sadly, when we talk about affordable housing, there's a face the other panelists have alluded to as well. People assume what that means.
Yeah.
And I can say from it does have an impact, because that's why there's people thwarting more density in areas where they're used to having that half acre lot. And those types, and it does it harm, because it doesn't allow diversification of housing types all over the county where it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say from my personal, I work with our actual home buyers. I'm getting personally in the last 2 weeks, I've gotten multiple emails from people looking to buy who are living in their, and one woman was living in her car and she had an income of $70,000 a year working two jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not a picture. That's a picture that we now kind of remember. This is somebody with trained skills. This problem has gotten beyond that base that we all want to say is the deadbeat or whatever. This is really, it's a real problem. And it's people with who have college degrees now that
could
are
happen,
impacted.
Could happen to any of us. Sandra Einhorn, Broward County is also being recognized these days for better public-private affordable housing partnerships between governmental agencies and corporate developers. What do you think Broward can teach other areas of South Florida and the state when it comes to that kind of critical cooperation? Just very briefly.
Well, there's a reason why we are known as Collaboration County. It sounds simple and cheesy, but teamwork makes the dream work. You know,
how
macroeconomics of housing affordability have a lot of zeros to it.
Yeah.
And it really does take nonprofit, business, government, and faith-based to all come together and say, okay, how do we each bring our strengths to the table to make something happen? Because if you're relying on just one of those, you know, one of those pieces to solve it all, you're never going to get anywhere.
Right. Sandra, I've got to move on here. Annie Lord, perhaps nowhere in Florida are the issues of wages and public transit access as critical to the affordable housing crisis as they are in Miami-Dade County. Is enough being done to address that in Miami-Dade County, do you think?
I think that there is a great conversation that's happening. And I believe that our elected officials are prioritizing public transit.
Unfortunately, I have to leave it there. I apologize. We're out of time. I must say here that I've been talking with Annie Lourdes, who directs Miami Homes for All, Hannah Edwards of Habitat for Humanity in Key West, Christina Hewitt for Community Land Trust in Palm Beach County, and Sandra Einhorn heads the Coordinating Council of Broward. Finally on the roundup, new affordable housing has brought first-time homebuyers in Lake Worth Beach both relief and joy, according to WLRN's Luke Wilkin Brutus.
Great.
That's the sound of dignitaries and community members celebrating the recent ribbon cutting for three affordable cottage homes. It's a nearly $1 million affordable housing project completed by the Community Land Trust of Palm Beach County, the county's nonprofit arm. Shamika Foster is a first-time home buyer from the program.
I can give my daughter a home that I never had. I'm just very, very happy now that they could do something like this for us as single parents.
The subsidized home ownership program is partly financed through the Federal American Rescue Plan, which supports low-income families and workers affected by COVID-19. Cindy LaCourse Bloom is the executive director for the Community Land Trust of Palm Beach County.
It's an opportunity to really make generational change. I mean, you're changing the life of these people by giving them an opportunity that otherwise that wouldn't have been presented to them.
LaCourse Bloom says the county is planning for 8 more units, with lots donated by the Lake Worth Beach CRA. I'm Wilkin Brutus in Palm Beach County.
That will do it for the South Florida Roundup. I'm Tim Padgett. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening. Gracias. Merci. Obrigado.
WLR.